This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
I recently had a conversation with Ruby Thorpe about her book, The Knockout Queen. At its most basic level, it's a book about friendship. But that's just one of the many themes we could have explored. It's also about sexuality, about fitting in, and it's about how we don't always do the right thing. And then there's Thorpe's writing. Somehow it's simultaneously accessible and sophisticated. She has a way of respecting people's desires and fragilities as legitimate. There are so many things to unpack here, just as there were when we had our conversation. So I'm going to start this as I did that day. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's Ruby Thorpe giving me her elevator speech for The Knockout Queen.
So The Knockout Queen is about two teenagers who are best friends, Bunny Lampert, who is extremely large with the abs of a Ninja Turtle and the face of a boy angel, and her next door neighbor, Michael, who is a straight-A student who works at Rite Aid after school and meets men online. And it's about their friendship, and it's about basically Bunny does something in a moment of just sort of reacting that then they both have to face the consequences for. So it's a book very much concerned with the body and with impulses, both sexual impulses and violent impulses, and sort of how we make sense of ourselves as animals.
The Knockout Queen refers to Bunny Lampert, and it seems like the cover image is a representation of her too, but it seems to be more of Michael's story, or is it both?
Well, I think that to me, I see the book as sort of in line with, there's sort of like a form of story that's where someone of this world tells you the story of someone beyond this world, like a kind of a gospel story. And so to me, things like The Great Gatsby and Breakfast at Tiffany's all fall in that category. And I would say that this book is as well. So Bunny is the thing that happens to him that changes him forever. And so in some sense, the story of his life and the story of Bunny's life are bound up together. But he is sort of trying to tell the story of Bunny. Instead of, like, I think if he were going to tell his own life story in toto, maybe he would start differently and end differently, but he's sort of focusing on her as like a motif in his own life, if that makes sense.
It does. And, you know, I was also wondering if there was a double meaning in the title, because Michael was good at impersonation. And you wrote something about how everyone is trying on new personalities all the time. Is there anything to that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think that one of the things that unites both Bunny and Michael is that they are not finding performing their gender super straightforward. So Bunny is having a really hard time displaying femininity in a way that feels natural to her, in part because she's really big and physically powerful, but she also is just not good at things like being coy, you know, or knowing how to flirt. She's too authentic for a lot of what we would normally consider like feminine wiles, kind of. And Michael, of course, has his own conflicted relationships too, because he's gay, but he's not exactly out. And he has complicated feelings about that in his own like family and with his friends. And so he is also trying to figure out a way to be authentically himself in this sort of constructed gender world. So they're both like, I mean, and they're both literally really into drag and drag queens and drag culture, and they watch, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race obsessively. So it's, the whole book is a lot about the way that we're all wearing masks with each other and the way that our identities are, to some extent, made up in the moment collaboratively with each other.
You mentioned that Bunny was really large, and she, you know, she was getting dating tips from Cosmo. She didn't quite know how to be, you know, a girl, and she was worried about being a monster. And there was at one point in the book where Michael, the narrator, broke down the difference between monster and freak, and the person who was being defined by these terms was Bunny. So I was wondering if you could talk to me about the difference in these definitions between monster and freak and why it mattered to Michael.
So the difference that he sort of points out is that monster comes for the root of the word is like a portent. And so a monster is a sign from God or from the universe that something is wrong. And so it's like a punishment sort of, because you've committed some sin, and so then therefore you are sent this monster. Whereas a freak is like, I guess the origin, the etymology of it is, has to do with like a little funky dance step. And so a freak is more like an aberration, like something wild that just sort of pops up unplanned, but it's not a sign that you've done anything wrong. And so he says that Bunny thinks of herself as a monster, but he'd always thought of her as a freak.
You know, I was wondering if you could talk to me a little bit about perspective, because the story is told from Michael's perspective, but you had to channel a lot of characters and a lot of different emotions. Were some of your characters' opinions difficult to swallow?
Well, I mean, I think that in each character, I mean, like the character who springs to mind when you ask that is Ray Lampert, because he is so terrible and so wonderful, and I love him and I hate him, and I've known so many Ray Lamperts in my life. I think that part of the reason that I write books in the first place is because I find the good and the bad in people to be really complicated and interwoven. And so there are lots of characters in the – none of the characters in the book is purely likable or just purely good. That's just not how I see people or the world working. But in terms of like – an authorial sense of like, how was it hard for me to access certain characters over others? I think that the book started very much with me trying to think about Bunny Lampert and her life, and Michael as a focalizer came later and was what kind of made the whole book actually work. I'd been really struggling with it for about a year before I figured out that he should be the one telling the story.
You know, you even made North Shore a bit of a character. How do you do a character study on a place?
Oh, well, I mean, I guess by giving yourself the freedom to... So at the time when I was starting to write this book, I was just moving. We were looking for a house in El Segundo. And I was spending... My little one would only go down for a nap anymore if I was driving. So I would drive around this tiny town in the winter rain for like hours and hours. And that was the time that I got to be in my own head. And so it seems sort of obvious in retrospect that I would then start thinking about it as the setting for a novel. But I also didn't know El Segundo really at all and was a newcomer to this place. And I could never have hoped to do a real portrait of the real town. So instead, I decided to make up a town called North Shore that would have the elements that I wanted to steal from the place, but where I wouldn't have any duty to be accurate or to, I didn't want people to think I was doing a real portrait of the place. But it's fun because, like, as I've talked to El Segundo readers, or like I did an interview with a little paper here, and the response I've gotten is like, "Wow, you really captured it," and I'm like, "Wow, that's real lucky."
You know, I have a rule that I only ask questions about books that I've actually read. And sadly, I didn't have time to go back and read your prior two novels after I finished reading The Knockout Queen. But I noticed from reading descriptions on your website that your first novel, The Girls from Corona Del Mar, also explores similar themes: friendship, abuse, alcoholism. What draws you to these human behaviors?
Well, I mean, I think that most writers are kind of writing the same book over and over again, and I'm not really an exception there. I think that questions about how to be a good person and how to love someone who's maybe not a good person have been really core to what I'm trying to explore artistically. And so a lot of times that comes with questions, or like interesting ways of framing those questions are in terms of substance abuse, where, you know, you can love someone wildly and then they can have an addiction problem that causes them to do bad things. And then you have to figure out, where's that line? Like, when do I stop loving them? Can I stop? Or is it against my will? You know, do I just love them helplessly? So I think that those questions have always obsessed me and will always obsess me. But I also think that some of it, like, friendship and alcoholism or substance abuse, I mean, they're like what life can be lived without being touched by those two things, you know.
You know, there was a point in the book where Michael was observing Bunny and her dad, Ray, and he thought there was no humanity in them, or perhaps there was too much humanity in them. Talk to me a little bit about what he was observing.
I mean, I think that we are ultimately really confused about our own natures and the extent to which, like, do we need to repress our base drives in order to be good? Or is being good being authentically yourself? What do we make of the fact that, like, being authentically ourselves sometimes means, like, being selfish assholes, you know? Like, so how do we balance all those things? And so for Michael, he is always trying, we normally say, you know, humanity in a good sense, like a collective sense of our own humanity, and that's what our morality is based in, is this sense that we are all humans together. But our humanity is also based in all of us being inherently kind of selfish and having these psychological limitations that make us immoral.
Yeah.
And so that conundrum is really what bothers him. And he never knows how responsible to hold Bunny. If he feels like she's getting off too scot-free, then he wants to hold her more accountable. But then when she's punished, he feels that her punishment is unjust. And he kind of can't figure out what he wants from her morally, ethically.
A friend of mine and I, we were discussing the book, and he noted that your writing is incredibly accessible, yet incredibly sophisticated. And you have a way of respecting people's desires and fragilities as legitimate. You know, I assume that was a conscious effort, or are you just that good?
I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure what the answer to that is. I mean, I think that is like what my, I mean, of course it's conscious. I want badly to like transcribe lovingly and faithfully what I see that is so difficult about being a person, you know? And I think that that's where the drive to make art comes from, is because you've sort of been burned by some understanding and you feel like unless you express it to somebody else, you'll just die. And so there's a lot about this book that is like my, you know, transmissions from some lost space station where I'm like, I think that this is what reality is. And then, you know, you get answering calls back from people saying like, yes, this is what reality is. And you feel excited. But I very much am interested in people and now I'm just rambling, but
well, we've talked about a lot, but is there anything that you wanted to talk about that I haven't asked?
I mean, I guess that a lot of people ask me about writing from the point of view of a young gay man,
right?
And that's something that I worried about a lot, and so for me that situation, I mean, and a lot of people ask, like, where did Michael kind of come from? And I think, like I said, I had been writing the book for about a year before I got the idea of writing from his perspective. And when I first started writing from his point of view, it was really explosive. And suddenly everything was coming together in the way that I wanted it to. And his voice just was effortless. And I'm not one of those people who believes that I'm like channeling from the astral realm, or, you know, that there are spirits speaking through me or anything. So whenever I hit, you know, something that feels like there's this incredible pressure to it, it usually is a deeply repressed aspect of self. And so that's very much what Michael is. He sure enough sort of started to drag up parts of my own biography. And I think in a lot of ways, he's the most autobiographical character that I've ever written, just with the gender switched. And so that's where he came from.
I mean, I thought about asking about that, but I think the whole American Dirt thing has me afraid to ask anybody about.
I've had to think about it because I knew I would have to answer it. And so, and I thought at first, you know, like, well, why did I? Why did I think that I had the right to do this? And I think that, so I've spent a lot of time thinking about ways that I think that that debate is framed correctly and ways that I feel like we frame it too loosely and casually. And I think one major mistake that we make is thinking that any fictional novel is going to give us authentic access to an other that is not the writer. Mm-hmm. You know, when you read a Ruffy Thorpe book, you're not going to meet a young gay man because I am not a young gay man. You're going to see me in a thousand different disguises. And that's how fiction works.
That was Rufy Thorpe, author of The Knockout Queen, which was published by Knopf. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover more author interviews at kmuw.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editor is Luann Stevens, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.